All right, so we're going to continue with Daniel chapter 2 today. We finished Daniel chapter 1 last week, and we're going to start the second chapter. And as I was thinking about preparing, in my mind, I had this thought that I would just be able to deal with the vision of Nebuchadnezzar's dream rather than the vision. But as I started to read through Daniel again and read through this chapter, so many things just started to come to me. And as I started to read around, I just thought, wow, there's such a lot in this chapter. So I don't think we'll get to the, well, we won't, because I haven't prepared about the statue to speak today. But just other things as we lead up to that. And just to quote my little verse of the song which I used to sing when I was in Sunday school a few years ago. You missed the opportunity there, didn't you? Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose firm and dare to make it known. And there are times in our daily lives when we have to decide to stand up for Jesus. Because things are said and we have an opportunity to speak for the Lord. And I think it was last Sunday, and I said when I was in the toning room, does anybody notice I've been in the toning room? No. You know, I'm sorry, I'll have to go a bit more often then to the toning room. But when I was there, somebody was saying about, you know, Easter, and somebody was saying, well, I'm not religious. Well, it just opened the door. Yeah. And, you know, it's just good to be able to take the opportunity to speak into those kind of situations, and we just need sometimes to be a little bit bold to do that. It's not always easy, I appreciate that, but it's a bit of boldness. And possibly if you went to Sunday school or something similar to that when you were growing up, we would be familiar with Daniel chapter 2 because it's one of those things which we're taught in Sunday school. And it's a great story of the image and things like that and the dream and the interpretation. But there are other things, as I said, before we get there, which have caught my attention. So I have printed out Daniel chapter 2. If anybody doesn't have a Bible and they would like a copy of Daniel chapter 2, you can have it. Because I'll be referring. Okay. Oh, that was a good guess, wasn't it? And so in verses 1 to 3, we want to read there first. This is a very long chapter, and so we'll just do a segment, and I'll just make some comment as we go through this each segment. So in the second year, verse 1 of Daniel chapter 2, in the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled, and he could not sleep. And so the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers. Some versions have Chaldeans instead of astrologers, to tell him what he had dreamed. And they came in and stood before the king, and he said to them, I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means. That's a big, tall order, isn't it? I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means. And the first thing I want to say is about this dream is that this is not just a normal dream. This is a supernatural dream. This is a dream which God has actually brought into Nebuchadnezzar's mind. And it's a prophetic dream, because out of this dream, out of the interpretation of this dream, we will learn quite a lot about future kingdoms and about God himself. And so it's a supernatural dream. It was a prophetic dream. It was from God, and it terrified Nebuchadnezzar. And not all dreams are from God, but when God does give us a dream, it is significant. Joel says that in the last days, your old men will dream dreams, or your young men will dream dreams, and which way is round is it? Your old men will dream dreams, and your young men will have visions. So I'd like to do a straw poll here now. Who's dreaming and who's having visions? And then we can work out people's ages perhaps. But, you know, and God actually often gives people dreams. And we need wisdom in how we interpret those dreams. And then we find that he called for the magicians. It says Nebuchadnezzar summoned four groups of people to tell him his dream and the interpretation. And the first thing he called was the magicians. Interestingly, I find this interestingly, except for this verse, this group of people are known as Egyptian magicians. And they're referred to throughout the Bible, but we read of them particularly in Exodus chapter 7, where Aaron, when Moses is going to Pharaoh, and Moses is saying to Pharaoh, God has raised up Moses to go to Pharaoh and say, you've got to let my people go. The people of Israel have been in captivity for 400 years. God has raised up Moses, who wasn't a willing kind of guy anyway, to go there because he said he stammers and stutters. And, you know, and so God put Aaron to go with him. And God has said to Moses, all right, you've got to go to Pharaoh now and tell Pharaoh to let my people go. And Moses is in a conundrum because he's saying, what kind of authority have I got before Pharaoh to say to let my people go? And so God says to him, when you go there, tell Aaron to lay down his staff. And when he lays down his staff, it'll turn in, you know, it'll be a supernatural happening. And so that's what happens. Aaron goes in chapter 7 and he lays down his staff and it turns into a snake. Very cool. But then the Egyptian magicians, which we read of in chapter 7 and verses 11 to 12, it says, and Pharaoh then summoned the wise men and sorcerers, and the Egyptian magicians also did the same thing by their secret arts. Each one threw down his staff, and it became a snake. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. We're on the winning side. We're on the winning side. Hey? Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. And then they called for the enchanters. And the enchanters were those people who, the Hebrew word here refers to conjurers and necromancers. That is, those who conjure up and communicate with the dead. And, you know, there's a lot of interest amongst a lot of people for spiritual things. I think the sad thing is that a lot of people are not looking to the church. But they're looking in other places because people, although they might not say they believe in life after death, they believe that there's something more to life than what they have now. And so people, you know, they want to do tarot cards and things like that. They visit psychics because they want to have some kind of assurance. But the only real assurance we have is through knowing Jesus, as you're very much aware. And then there were the sorcerers. That was those who engaged in witchcraft and the casting of spells. And then the astrologers. Some versions, as I've said, call them Chaldeans. And it has been suggested that these people were not really part of Babylon. They were a kind of semi-nomadic kind of people. And they were of a tribe of their own. And they lived in the southern part of Babylon. But they were regarded as, and then they were known for their, is it back there? Yeah, they're known for their intelligence and their study of astronomy and astrology. And you'll be aware probably that astronomy is a scientific study of the stars and planets and comets and all that kind of stuff, where astrology is a pseudoscience. And it's out of astrology comes the provision of horoscopes and psychic readings. And so Nebuchadnezzar had this dream. It frightened the pants off him, if I can say that. And he calls for these wise men. And he says to them, I want you to tell me, not just the dream. I want you to tell me, sorry, not just the interpretation of the dream. I want you to tell me the dream. Tall order. We're keeping an eye. So verse 4 of chapter 2, and it says, then the astrologers answered the king, may the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it. The king replied to the astrologers, this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. No pressure there then, is there? No pressure there. Okay. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Now, this is a choice to make, isn't it? Yeah? So tell me the dream and interpret it for me. Once more they replied, let the king tell his servants the dream and we will interpret it. And then the king answered, I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change so then tell me the dream and I will know that you can interpret it for me. And these verses really expose for us two different sides of Nebuchadnezzar. First of all, we see his ruthlessness, okay, because he threatens the astrologers to cut them into pieces and turn their houses into piles of rubble if they do not tell him what the dream is. As I said, no pressure. But also then we see his other side of manipulation. And if he can't frighten them into telling in the dream and interpreting it, then he tries to sweeten them. You know, well, I'll give you gifts and things like that, rewards. And his tone changes completely. And two questions have been asked about this kind of situation with Nebuchadnezzar forgetting his dream. Did he forget the dream? And there's no certain answer to that. Some people think he forgot the dream. Some people think that he was just testing these soothsayers and these different people, magicians and stuff like that. Or was it the fact that he didn't trust these wise men, these magicians, these enchanters and sorcerers and astrologers? Was it perhaps that he had realized that if he told them the dream, then they would come up with any kind of answer? Perhaps there's some background in it. But from verse 9b, it would appear that Nebuchadnezzar didn't trust these wise people. Because he says there, you have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me. And so here is some doubt. Are these guys really genuine or are they not genuine? David Guzik, in his commentary, says this. This was a test of the genuineness of the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers. They made their living from their supposed ability to contact the gods and gain secrets from the spirit realm. If they were really what they claimed to be, they should be able to tell Nebuchadnezzar both the dream and its interpretation. If they could see into the future, if they could actually be able to do the things which they professed they were able to do, then they should have been able to tell the dream as well as the interpretation. And so we have in verses 10 to 11, the wise men explained to Nebuchadnezzar the impossibility of his request. The astrologers answered the king, verse 10, there is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans. No one can reveal it to the king, and they do not live, except the gods, sorry, and they do not live among humans. Here's a question. You don't have to answer it for me. Was Nebuchadnezzar being unreasonable in his request? Was he just being pedantic? Was he just because he was scared by this thing? Was he just being awkward? I'll let you decide. But it's obvious that the enchanters and the magicians and all these different groups of people which Nebuchadnezzar called to him thought he was. Verse 10. There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. And in my imagination, as I was reading these verses, this verse, and reading through this thing, I can imagine these guys getting a little bit frustrated and their frustration coming out, and they say, no king! However great and mighty, and don't forget, Nebuchadnezzar is the mighty one. He is known as the King of Kings, in small case. Don't confuse him with the King of Kings. But he is known as the King of Kings. And no king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or astrologer or enchanter. Nebuchadnezzar, you are just being plain unreasonable here. Verse 11 says, what the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans. And this statement is so true. This statement is true. Because the wise men, they look to gods who are not gods. They look to gods who are not gods. Daniel, he looked to Yahweh. And some people would translate the word Yahweh into Jehovah, which is, he is the Lord. And we look to Jesus, who is Emmanuel, God who is with us. And what these guys were saying, amongst everything else which they got wrong, the gods, their gods, do not live amongst humans, but our God does. Our God does. Because in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, and he came and dwelt amongst us. And further down in John's Gospel, it says, and he came to his own, but his own would not receive him. But to as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. And our God came to us. This is why we celebrate Christmas, to remember this great gift that God came to us. Again, I want to quote David Guzik, and he didn't put it out this way in his commentary, but I put it into bullet points because I find it easier to kind of understand the paragraph that way. He says this: when the astrologers said this, they admitted that true revelation comes from God down to man. They understood, perhaps, against their own inclinations, that revelation was not the achievement of man. And despite all their wisdom, real and imagined, these men had no answer for Nebuchadnezzar, because only God could bring an answer to the king. We need to remember this for ourselves, because sometimes we can go around looking for answers in the wrong place. As I was preparing this, I was reminded of a situation where somebody was quite unwell and they wanted healing, and they were asking for prayer for healing, and it just didn't happen. Why, I don't know. It just didn't happen. There's some things there's no explanation for. And this particular person turned on the television one day and started watching some of the God TV. I don't know which channel it was, so I just used that as a general term. And the pastor on this channel, he said, send me your seed. Send me £25 and I will pray for you and you will get your healing. And they sent £25. But they never got the healing. I was a little bit upset. And I said, why didn't they put £25 in the offering? Because we would have prayed for them. For nothing. And you know, sometimes we can look in the wrong places. Sometimes we can, you know, be in our desperation, perhaps. We can go down the wrong road. Sometimes when life is tough, we can think that God doesn't care. But God is the one who has the answers. And his promise to us is that he will supply all our needs according to his riches in glory. And then we find that Daniel comes into this situation in verses 12 to 19. So we pick it up in verse 12. And this made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death. and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put the wise men of to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, "Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?" Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Here's a generous, you know, kind of thing. You know, Daniel is not just concerned about his own life, not just concerned about the life of his friends. He's concerned about the lives of these other guys who are looking to the wrong place for the answer. And during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, "Praise be to the name of God forever. There's a mistake there, because God here is in lowercase. Perhaps I've typed it wrongly, but it should be a capital G, not a small g. Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his." So verses 12 to 13 actually give us the recklessness and destructiveness of unbridled anger. Verse 12, "This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death." It wasn't just this group of men who had gone into Nebuchadnezzar. It wasn't just this select few who he had called. But in his anger, in his fury, Nebuchadnezzar said, "All the wise men within Babylon are to be put to death." Daniel wasn't involved in this group of people. Neither were his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, or Azariah. They were out of the situation for whatever reason. And yet, through the king's anger, his decree actually affected them. Some have suggested that this is now Nebuchadnezzar's second reign, and perhaps some of these wise men, these enchanters, these sorcerers, these magicians, well, perhaps they're people who've come over from the reign of his father, and he wants to clear them out. It might be, but I think he's just lost it. And in his temper, in his fury, he has just spoken out. And you know, it's a solemn lesson for us that we guard our tongues. You know, James says, you know, that the tongue is we need to look after it. We need to make sure it's bridled. Proverbs talks about our tongue and being unbridled. And you know, if we lose it and we say things, there's no way we can take it back. And the destructiveness of the tongue is such a wise lesson for us to learn. Jerry Robinson, in his commentary, said this: "His rage at the few impairs his judgment towards all." His rage at the few impairs his judgment towards all. And that's what happens when we become angry. That's what happens when anger overtakes us. So actually, our judgment becomes impaired. Again, just to quote David Guzik, he says, "In one sense, crisis does not make the man. Instead, they reveal a man." I like that. In one sense, crisis do not make the man. Instead, they reveal the man. And in verses 12 to 19, we see the contrast between Nebuchadnezzar's reaction to being told what his dream, that they can't do that. They can't tell him his dream. They can't tell him the interpretation. And Daniel's approach. Daniel, although completely innocent of all that had taken place, faced a death penalty. Nebuchadnezzar, angry and furious. But I loved what it said about Daniel. He was wise and tactful. He was wise and tactful. Isn't that a great lesson for us? when we're upset, when things are not going our way, when perhaps people don't agree with us. How do we react? Let's try and be like Daniel. Let's try and learn a lesson from him. And let's try to be wise and tactful. And then verses 14 to 18, when Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke with him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, why did the king issue such a harsh decree? And Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And he urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the wise men of Babylon. I've already read that, haven't I? When Daniel speaks with the men first, and then speaks with God, Daniel found out the situation, and then he spoke to God, included his friends. Do you know, and sometimes when we come to prayer, we need to know what we're praying about. We need to understand situations. We need to have correct information so that we can pray intelligently. In verse 19, in the first part of the verse, it says there that during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. And then in the next section, verses 19b to 23, we see that Daniel speaks to God. So before he comes to pray, Daniel is speaking to men. He wants to find out, what is the situation? Why is the king so angry? Why has he made this decree? And then he goes with intelligence to pray, and he includes his friends with that. And then after the prayer, after the mystery was revealed by God to Daniel, Daniel then speaks with God. And Daniel, in verse 20, he praises God. And he says this in verse 20, in verse A. He says, praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. And he repeats that. He repeats the character of God. He repeats the attribute of God in verse 23. Do you know, when we come to pray, we need to think about how Jesus taught his disciples to pray. The Lord's Prayer, our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. And sometimes when we come to pray, we just rush in. We just rush in. And we just want to bring our requests. But here, Daniel he's just wanting to actually bring honor to God. We sang earlier, bless the Lord, O my soul. You know, and this is what our life is about, is actually bringing praise, bringing worship, bringing adoration, bringing honor to God. And even in our prayers, even when we are fairly desperate for answers, we need to remember who God is and to give him his rightful place. And then he says this. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. In those two verses, Daniel uses the name he five times. It's all about God. All about God. All about God. We used to sing a song. We don't sing it very often these days. It's all about you, Jesus. It's all about you. That's as if you should do things my way. For you alone are God. Yeah. And we need to remember that, don't we? Notice what God does. He changes. He changes situations. And God can change people. God has changed me. You might not believe that, but he has. He deposes, or he removes. He knows. He knows everything. There's nothing, isn't that great? Nothing today that God doesn't know about your life and your situation. He gives and he reveals. Yeah. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. He changes. He deposes or removes. He knows. He gives. He reveals. In short, God is in control. He is the sovereign, great I am. And then he goes on in verse 23. He says, I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret the dream for him. And I found this quite amusing, actually, in verse 25. Arioch took Daniel to the king. At once, and said, I have found a man amongst the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means. Well, that's untrue. It's not true. Because he didn't find Daniel. Daniel went to him. And now we have to be careful that we don't stretch the truth. Here was Arioch, I think, might be wrong, I think he was looking for brownie points. You know, he must have known, because of the issue, the decree the Nebuchadnezzar had issued, that this dream, knowing this dream, was so important to him. So I think. Here is Daniel. Here is Arioch. Sorry, Arioch. Not Daniel, Arioch. Saying, I'll get some brownie points for this. I might be wrong. That's what I think. He wanted praise from the king, where Daniel wanted to give God. Arioch wanted praise from the king, where Daniel wanted God to have the glory, as it was God who showed Daniel the dream and the interpretation. In verse 26, then the king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it? Daniel's very wise here, very clever. He says, Daniel replied, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has about. He has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Neb. Sorry, I'm messing this up, aren't I? But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. There's a God in heaven. When I read those verses, I thought, wow, yeah, there's a God in heaven. No matter what my situation, no matter what your situation, there is a God in heaven, and he is able to do immeasurably more than we can ever ask or imagine, according to his power that resides within us. So the dream. Let me just recap it for you as I close this morning. The dream. God inspired. Had a dramatic effect of Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 1, his mind was troubled and he could not sleep. We will find later as we go through the rest of the chapter, it was through this dream that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah got promoted within the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar. Here they were. Remind ourselves, here they were. They were prisoners, really. They'd been taken from their land of Judah. They become servants, slaves. They had a certain amount of freedom. But God uses them in a tremendous way. And because of his wisdom through them, so they get promoted. The New Testament talks about a little bit of yeast. You know, and they were yeast in this situation. And we're yeast in the world. We can bring something good. Chris used to make bread years ago. I don't know much about making bread. I'd rather eat it than make it myself. But you know, she used to put a little bit of yeast, and because of the yeast, it changed the whole thing. You ladies know all about that. Perhaps some of you men do as well. But, you know, we're called to be salt and light. We're called to be yeast in the world. And we're called to bring change. And here, through the way that they lived, that Daniel and his friends, they got promoted within the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar. And although Nebuchadnezzar was the most powerful king at this period in time, no one was like him. He was cruel and ruthless and ruled people with an iron fist. His position and power have no equal to that of God's. We find in the New Testament, Herod had a similar kind of disposition to Nebuchadnezzar. We will read in another chapter where his pride just gets hold of him and he loses everything. The same happened to Herod. We need to be careful that we give God glory for what he's done and for who he is. And then Nebuchadnezzar searched for the answer to his dream through the wrong people, wrong methods. It was only the man of God, Daniel, who was able to tell him both the meaning and the interpretation of his dream. This dream has a tremendous effect upon Nebuchadnezzar, but actually carries for us a lot of truth. As we go into the dream next week, hopefully, we will find out some of those things. We're going to sing the song. I want to play the song.